Hi, everyone. We are getting our screen up right now, but I'm going to welcome you. I'm your host, Pamela Birdman. This is the third in a series of webinars called Quantitative Leap, exploring how math policies can strengthen the transition between high school and college. We have two sponsors for the webinar series, the Opportunity Institute, a Berkeley-based nonprofit that promotes social mobility and equity by improving educational opportunity and outcomes. And hopefully you now see our screen, and LearningWorks, an Oakland-based partnership that aims to strengthen student achievement in community colleges. Support for the webinars comes from the James Irvine and the College Futures Foundations, and I want to heartily thank our sponsors and our funders for the webinars. These webinars grew out of a policy brief I wrote and LearningWorks published this year. Our first two webinars looked at state efforts to rethink post-secondary mathematics sequences and research on the limitations of traditional placement tests and new approaches to placement being developed in California and elsewhere. Recordings of those webinars are on our sponsors' websites. A key related issue and the subject for this webinar is how much and what sort of math do students need in high school to be academically prepared for post-secondary education? My policy brief recommended improving the quality, availability, and variety of senior year math courses that prepare students for college. This complex and multifaceted issue spans the work of K-12 education systems as well as higher education, which for those of us in California means three separate systems. It is also confounded by how we define and measure college readiness, something that is also shifting, as we discussed in the prior webinars and will consider as well today. Our panelists are going to help us think about the impact of rigorous coursework, for which there is a fair amount of evidence, and also talk a bit about the effects of requiring more difficult curriculum for everyone, which is more under debate and with less conclusive research, raising concerns about effects on things like high school graduation rates. The answers to these questions have profound implications for high school graduation, college admission, and college readiness. Currently, we know that the majority of states require 3 or 4 years of math, typically including Algebra 2, for high school graduation. California, on the other hand, is one of just 5 states that require only 2 years of math to graduate from high school through Algebra 1. Though there are districts that require more than that, as one of our presenters will discuss. And we also know that UC and CSU require a minimum of 3 years for admissions. We also know that students going to college are already taking more math and more rigorous math than high school graduates overall, and that students attending more selective colleges tend to have taken more years of math while in high school. We also know that there are differences along racial lines. Our presenters will help us think more deeply about the implications of policies around math course taking in high school and for college entry and readiness. And now to introduce our presenters. Again, I'm Pamela Birdman and I'm your host for today. Our first presenter is going to be Sonia Sedevi. Sonia is an associate scientist at the University of Wisconsin Center for Placement Testing, where she's been looking at how to improve post-secondary preparation and placement. She will share her research on implications of high school course taking for math placement in the state of Wisconsin. A related question is, if we do think students should take more high school math courses or certain high school math courses in order to be well prepared, should we require them to do so? Julian Betz's research will help shed light on the challenges and potential outcomes of such requirements to strengthen high school graduation requirements. Julian is a professor of economics at UC San Diego, where he directs SANDERA, the San Diego Education Research Alliance. He's also a research associate at NBER and an adjunct fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California. Our third panelist is Louise Jaffe. In addition to being an education researcher, Louise chairs the Board of Trustees at Santa Monica College, and she serves on the Common Assessment Initiative Steering Committee and the Multiple Measures Advisory Board for the community colleges. Her research also sheds light on high school course taking, but in the specific context of community college placement policies. Lastly, and I want to say I'm pleased that we're hearing from all three of California's higher ed segments today, our last presenter is David Barsky. He's a professor, associate professor of math at Cal State San Marcos, and he's the vice chair of Cal State's Academic Preparation and Education Program Committee. He's going to discuss a current proposal that originated in that committee that might lead to new admissions requirements within CSU in math. After the presentations, we will have time for Q&A, so please submit your questions at any point during the webinar and note to whom your question is addressed. And now I'm pleased to welcome Sonia Sedevi. Sonia?
Thank you, Pamela. All right. So here in the state of Wisconsin, much like what you guys are dealing with in California and what the rest of the country is thinking about, we've been very interested in high school preparedness and how it translates to college readiness once our students transition to us here within the University of Wisconsin system. So today I'm going to talk briefly about a study that we did in Wisconsin that looks at high school preparedness and placement into college level mathematics courses. And while the study was conducted here in Wisconsin, I do think it has implications outside the state, and we'll discuss that a little bit as we go along. But specifically, what we were interested in is whether or not students who complete math during their senior year of high school score higher on our mathematics placement test in comparison to students who do not take math during their senior year of high school. Second, we were interested in if there was an observed difference between those two groups in terms of their average math placement test score. Does that actually result in different placement levels? And we'll talk why these are different questions here within our state. And then third, we're interested in whether or not math skills regress for students who don't take math during their senior year of high school, who stop during their junior year. But before we can talk about that, let me just give you a very brief background on our mathematics placement test. So the office I work for, the Center for Placement Testing, has been developing and validating our mathematics placement test for over 40 years. It is used by all of the University of Wisconsin system campuses. And I should mention that within the University of Wisconsin system, we have 26 campuses. 14 of those campuses are two-year colleges, and the remaining institutions are four-year universities, two of which are large research institutions. So we have a fair amount of diversity in the types of institutions that are included within our system. Once a student has been admitted to one of those 26 UW system campuses, they're then invited to take placement tests. And our math placement test consists of 85 multiple choice items, 75 of which count towards a student's score. And students receive scores in three areas: basic math skills, algebra, and trigonometry. And on all of the campuses, it's a combination of those three scores that are used to determine a student's placement. And they can place anywhere ranging from developmental level mathematics up into the calculus sequence on most of the campuses. Scores on each of those three sections range from 150 to an 850, and we're constantly doing research on our tests, and the sections are highly reliable, exactly what you'd want to see for a higher stakes standardized exam. In addition, we ask them a very short math background survey, things like, did you take math during your junior year of high school? Did you take math during your senior year of high school? And we also asked them to identify which math courses they took during both their junior and senior year, if they took math during both of those years. For this study, we looked at 3 years worth of data. The data was on students all across UW system, so including all 26 of those campuses. But we did restrict the data set to only students who were 17 to 19 and a half years old when they took their placement test. And the reason for this is that on our math background survey, we don't actually ask them when was the last time they took a mathematics course. So for students who've been out of high school for a while, who are returning students, we actually had no way of knowing whether or not they had taken a math course in the interim. We only knew if they had taken one during their junior and or senior year of high school. So for purposes of this study, we wanted to make sure that we were targeting students that we were confident had very recently finished high school, so that we could look at whether or not there was a difference specifically between junior year and senior year. We also only included students who actually completed the math background survey, so they had complete data, both the placement test score and survey information. The main reason why somebody maybe was not included in the analysis was because they did not complete the math background survey, but the resulting sample size was just under 50,000 students. The majority of these students had taken a senior year math course, but just under 10,000 had not taken math during their senior year of high school. So just to revisit the research questions, the first question was whether or not students who complete math during their senior year of high school end up scoring higher on our mathematics placement test than the students who did not take math during their senior year of high school. And here's what we found. For all three sections of our math placement test, the students who did not take math their senior year, who stopped taking mathematics after their junior year of high school, on average scored about 100 points lower on all three sections of the math placement test. These differences they're all statistically significant. So the students who are taking senior year math are scoring statistically higher on all three sections of our math placement test. Since we found an observed difference between average math placement test scores, our next question was whether or not that actually results in different placement levels. And these may seem like they're the same question, but as I mentioned before, most of the UW system campuses use a combination of the three math placement test scores, math basics, algebra, and trigonometry, in order to place students into an appropriate math course. But we recognize that the math curriculum and the student bodies vary from campus to campus. So each campus has their own set of cut scores and their own placement algorithm to determine where their particular students should start their college career in mathematics. And since each institution uses its own cut scores and has its own algorithm for placement, it makes it difficult to know if that score difference that we saw in the previous slide actually results in higher placement levels for students who have completed senior year math. And because of this, and because we're often looking at this across different institutions who have different placement algorithms, we have come up with a way of categorizing the placement test scores into 9 different placement levels that neutralizes the fact that there are different cut scores across campuses. So with our 9 placement levels, the important ones to look at in this graph is that a level 1 and 2 correspond to developmental mathematics placement on any of the UW system campuses, and a level 9 corresponds to a calculus placement. The different levels in the middle, levels 3 through 8, is going to vary what the placement is depending on which campus a student is attending, but in terms of developmental level placement, a level 1 or 2 indicates developmental, and a level 9 indicates calculus, regardless of which campus a student is attending. So if we look at this graph on the left, we see students who did not complete a senior year math course in comparison to those who did complete a senior year math course. And what we see is that for students who did not complete senior year math, they're more frequently placing into that developmental level math class, the levels 1 or 2, in comparison to students who did complete senior year math. And the students who did complete senior year math more frequently are placing into calculus compared to those students who did not complete a senior year math. So it does manifest as different placement levels on each of the UW campuses. Oops. So specifically, about 21% of the students who did not take a senior year math placed in developmental level mathematics, compared to only 7.5% of the students who did take a senior year math. And on the other side of that, about 31% of the students who did take senior year math received a calculus placement, compared to only 6.8% of those students who did not complete a senior year math course. So the final thing that we wanted to look at was whether or not math skills regressed for students who did not take math during their senior year of high school. And to do this, we looked at a subset of classes, trigonometry, pre-calculus, and Algebra 2. So we compared students who took that particular math class during their junior year and then stopped, did not take a senior year math, and compared them to students who took that same class during their senior year. So the students ended with the same class during their high school career, though some of them stopped at junior year and others stopped at senior year. So what we see for trigonometry is that there is a significant difference on all three of the sections of our math test. These are statistically significant, where the students who took that trigonometry course during their senior year were scoring on average higher than students who took that during their junior year. And the largest difference, as we would expect for a trigonometry class, was on the trigonometry scale. We see a very similar result for pre-calculus. Again, these are statistically significant differences, where the students who stopped with pre-calculus was their final math course, but they happened to take it during their senior year, where they were scoring higher on average on all three sections of our math test. But then we looked at the results for Algebra 2, and we see a different pattern here. And what we see is that students who their final math class that they took was Algebra 2, regardless of if it was their junior versus their senior year, their scores on the placement tests look very, very similar. And in fact, they have the exact same score on average on the trigonometry section. Only the algebra results here are statistically significant. And at first, this kind of surprised me, but we went back to the literature and found some literature that suggests that skills may solidify if you've taken multiple classes with similar content. So the fact that this is an Algebra 2 class and these students likely would have taken an Algebra 1 class may have helped to solidify some of their skills and could be a reason why we're seeing a different pattern here. But the more important thing for me that this shows is that it matters which math class you're taking during your senior year or during your junior year. And this is also shown here on this last slide, or second to last slide, where we looked at basically the impact of academic rigor. So students who took trigonometry or pre-calculus during their junior year, but no senior year math, are their scores are given in the top two rows. And we're comparing them to students who took a senior year level math, but it happened to be Algebra 2. And we see that those students who did not take senior year math, but ended with pre-calculus or trigonometry, are actually scoring higher on average on all three sections of our placement test than the students who did take senior year math, but it was Algebra 2. So this suggests to us that there is an impact of academic rigor or the types of math class that you take and during your high school career. So ultimately, the results of the study, we think, provides us evidence in support of students taking a senior year math class, and those who are taking senior year math classes in general are scoring higher and earning higher placements than on our math placement test here in Wisconsin. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonia. Look forward to discussing that more. Now we're going to hear from Julian, who did some very interesting research in San Diego about what might happen when we require more courses, including math, of students. Julian, your turn.
Great. Thank you very much. So this is work that I've done with a number of colleagues here at UC San Diego, looking at an increase in the graduation requirement in San Diego Unified, the second largest district in California. And the roots of this work, in a way, go back to President Obama's repeated calls for high schools in the United States to really do two things: to prepare people for college, but also for career. In California, that led to the ACLU lobbying some of the largest districts in the state to increase access to college preparatory coursework. Here in California, those courses are known as the A to G coursework, and you need to complete those courses in order to be eligible to attend either of the state university systems, Cal State, CSU, or UC, the University of California. A number of districts, including San Diego Unified, reacted to these calls from the ACLU by deciding to make A to G coursework a graduation requirement. They did so in 2012, with the first graduating class subject to this new rule being the class of 2016. A number of large districts in the state have done exactly the same or have implemented similar policies. That would include LA Unified, San Francisco Unified, and also Oakland. For those of you outside California, just very briefly, what do we mean by the A to G course sequence? It consists of 15 year-long courses in 7 different subject areas. I'll just point out one of them, since today our focus is on math. Area C in the A to G requirements is mathematics, which is a 3-year math requirement. So what did that mean in San Diego when this new A to G graduation requirement was imposed? Well, San Diego had already required 6 semesters of credit, but it had not required intermediate algebra to be the capstone course. So that's actually a fairly significant increase because it means an extra year of algebra for a lot of students. And if you compare the prior requirements to the current requirements, math and world language were really the 2 subject areas where the requirement really was boosted most strongly. I should just point out very quickly that both the University of California and Cal State require that students complete all their A to G courses with grades of C or higher in order to be eligible. San Diego Unified and the other districts were concerned that that was too high of a hurdle, and in order to graduate from these districts, all you need to do is to complete the A to G coursework with grades of D or higher. I think the idea is to make these courses accessible to all and leave the door open to attending one of the 2 state public university systems in California. So the report that we just published through the Public Policy Institute of California has a number of goals. We've looked at the classes of 2016 through 2018, which are the first 3 cohorts of graduating classes subject to this new requirement, just to ask first, are they actually taking and completing more A to G courses? We look at students in the class of 2016 through August last year, so at the end of summer school, just as they were poised to enter their senior year. We want to get a sense of who stands to gain from this policy and who stands to lose in terms of college eligibility, but also graduation rates from high school. We'll talk very briefly about some policy implications. I think I've already stated this last point, but it bears repeating. For our analysis, we have transcript data right up through August 2015, in other words, right at the end of summer school after grade 11 for the class of 2016. This first graph is just showing that in the district, when we graph courses taken, that's the top line with the black solid line, courses completed with grades of D or better, that's the middle solid line, or classes completed with grades of C or higher, which is the UC and CSU requirement, which is shown by the bottom line with the dashed red line, you'll see there's an ongoing trend in San Diego that's been underway for many years, where each successive graduating cohort has been completing slightly more courses by the end of grade 11. If you look to the right of the vertical line, that's the class of 2016, the first class required to complete all the A to G courses. They continue that trend. It's hard to see in this graph, but there's also a positive break from this trend, the statistically significant, meaning that, yes, indeed, students in this graduating cohort who are, in a sense, the guinea pigs for this new policy really are completing more courses than they had in the past. One piece of good news, when we try to forecast from the end of grade 11 to June 2016 as to what is likely to happen, we think that the percentage of graduates from San Diego Unified will graduate actually being eligible to attend the University of California or Cal State could rise if everybody in the class of 2016 continued to take at least one course in each of those subject areas and pass them in their senior year. 59% of students would graduate having completed the A to G requirements with grades of C or better. And that's about a 10 percentage point gain compared to a couple of years ago. So if that, we don't know the results yet, but if that actually transpires, you would suggest that at least for students towards the top end of the achievement distribution, many more of them are becoming eligible or will become eligible to attend the two public universities in California. The bad news is that unless students between September last year and June of this year greatly increased their course taking and completion rates, graduation rates for the class of 2016 were basically set to fall. The June 2014 graduation rate was 87.5%, and after summer school that year, the graduation rate in San Diego rose to 89.7%. So that's the official rate as calculated by the California Department of Education. Our projection was that if students take A to G courses and pass all of them in 2015-16 at the normal rate of about six full courses a year, only about 72% would complete A to G with grades of D or higher, while at the same time meeting another graduation requirement, which is having a GPA of at least 2.0. So if that actually is what happened during the last 12 months, it would represent a fairly substantial drop in the graduation rate of about 15.5% from June 2014. We looked at which students were taking more courses in the class of 2016 compared to that pre-existing trend I showed you a few minutes ago. And the general pattern we found was that students from lower socioeconomic groups or status were the ones who were increasing their course taking to a greater extent. What each of these bars is showing is the number of additional A to G courses completed with grades of D or higher in the class of 2016 compared to what we predicted given the pre-existing trend. And you'll see for all groups, when we group students by parental education, all groups are increasing their course taking beyond what we predicted. But if you look at the bottom trio of bars, this refers to students with whose parents have some college, a high school diploma, or less than a high school diploma. These are the students who are increasing their course taking to the greatest extent. So that's very good news. On the other hand, if you look at the x-axis here, you'll see that the course taking increase is pretty small. It, for most of these groups, is somewhere between 1/2 and just under 2 semester courses by the end of grade 11. So I already told you that overall we were projecting that about 72% of students were on track to graduate. This is showing projected graduation rates by racial and ethnic groups, that's the top set of bars, by parental education and by special education and English learner status. And you'll see that first looking at race and ethnicity in the top of this graph, Hispanics and African Americans were projected to be graduating at about a 60% rate, well below Asians and whites. When you look at parental education, there's a very steep difference in our predicted graduation rates. And in a way, this contradicts what I just showed you. I showed you just one slide ago that students whose parents had not graduated from high school or had just graduated from high school but had not got on to post-secondary had increased their course taking to the greatest extent. The bad news is that that wasn't enough. So for instance, students whose parents have not graduated from high school, just under 60% of those students are on track to actually graduate on time. Turning to special education students and students who were English learners at the start of grade 9, we found that only 38% of students who were receiving special education services were on track to graduate, and only 34% of students who, as of grade 9, were designated English learners. So this is sort of a double-edged sword. More people will be prepared for college, but some of the more disadvantaged groups in the district may see their graduation rates fall. This next graph is showing you the breakdown of how many courses behind students are by each of the subject areas in A through G. So if you look at the third bar from the left, this is math. We're showing with the sort of mauve purple bar at the top the percentage of students who had 0 to 2 semester courses to complete by the end of by the end of grade 12. So that number is very good. We're at 88% of students being on track. However, 5.3% of students had more than 2 years of math yet to complete. If you look at the various subject areas, you'll see that English and math are the two biggest barriers to graduation on time, with 23.1% and 11.7% of students requiring more than 1 year of work to complete in their senior year. Pam, just so you know, no longer have control of the slides and I cannot see them. So if you could scroll forward to the next slide, that would be very helpful.
Okay. Is it the one that says 23.1%?
Yes. So if you could go to the summary and policy options slide, that would be great.
Summary and policy options. Next
slide. 34.
Sorry about the technical difficulty, everyone.
That's all right. Well, maybe our listeners are irked, but I think we can handle it. There we go. So, as I said before, this policy is something of a double-edged sword. Some students are clearly going to gain. We were projecting as of last August that an extra 10% of students were on track to be eligible to attend Cal State or University of California by virtue of completing all this coursework with grades of C or higher. But the bad news was that unless students greatly accelerated their course completion rate in grade 12, an extra 15.5% could fail to graduate on time. We won't know the actual graduation rates until next spring because it's really the State Department of Education that follows students who leave district-managed schools and go elsewhere. The district has implemented a number of reforms which I think could help. For several years now, they've increased spending on summer school, and just in 2015-16, they instituted a very aggressive online credit recovery system, and the district believes that the graduation rate may not fall at all. So I think it's going to take us some time to really understand exactly what's happened this year. But a lot of students we felt were at risk. And then going to the final slide on additional policy options. It seems to us that it's great that there are intensive supports like online credit recovery in grade 12, but when 1 out of 8 students entering grade 12 had completed 1.5 or fewer of the 3 required math courses, that suggests that we really need to start intervening earlier, especially with a subject like mathematics, where knowledge it builds on itself, and one course follows another in a cumulative way. So interventions that could be implemented before high school include tutoring after school, summer school, and so on. In our PPIC report, we actually include a forecasting model which shows that using things like test scores and grades as of the end of grade 6, we can forecast who's going to complete the A to G coursework with a very high degree of accuracy. So knowing that we can identify students who are at risk of not fulfilling this new graduation requirement at least makes it possible to intervene in middle school or possibly even earlier. And going to the final slide, anyone who's interested in this report can download it from the Public Policy Institute of California. The URL for this is at the top of this slide. And there are 2 earlier studies we've done of this, one published by the PPIC, and another looking at students as of grade 9, but in a lot more detail than I've been able to show you here. That's available on our website at sandera.ucsd.edu. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Julian. And if you do want these URLs, we will be sending out the slides and the recording. They'll be on the website, so you'll be able to access it there. And now I want to introduce Louise Jaffe, who's going to talk more about this subject from a community college perspective. Thanks, Louise.
Okay. Whoops. So, let's see. For me, I think it's important that we focus on community colleges for one really big reason, and that is it's where the students are. So if you look at California students in higher education, 73% of the students are in a community college. And at CSU, which is 14%, and UC, which has 7%, more than half of the CSU students have transferred, and about a third of UC students transferred, almost all from a community college. So that really means that students going directly from high school to our public universities, CSU and UC, are really only about 11% of all of California higher education students, which I think really begs the question, do all California high school students really need to complete A through G? If you're transferring to CSU or UC from a community college, you do not need to have completed A through G to make that travel that path. So, something to think about. I did some research too, and the research I did was looking at a sample of about 3,000 students, but then looking at the state, so in fall of 2010, for the community college system in California, about 85% of our students placed into remedial math, some level below. So we're talking about a whole lot of students here coming in and being deemed as not college ready. In the research that I did, I looked at, I did two things, but one was to sort of observe the paths that students did in high school. So where did students start? What grade 9 math did they take? Where did they stop? What was the highest level math they reached? So that could either be in 12th grade if they took 12th grade math. And when did they stop? And that's because many students don't take math in grade 12. So who took no math in grade 12? This is data from a sample from Ed Results Partnership that looked at about a third of all 12th graders from 11-12. And 44% of those students took no math in grade 12. And I looked at other things, and it seemed to be representative. Now, this is a smaller, in Pamela's opening statement, she said 70% of California high school grads took math in senior year. This is saying that only about 56% did, so we have some differences in numbers, but the point remains many students are not taking math in grade 12, and that there's some variation by ethnicity, but it's pervasive among every group. I also looked at who took Algebra 2 or higher before grade 12, and this fits in with some of the research that Sonia was talking about, and from Edelman's research that every course beyond Algebra 2 doubles the odds of completing college. And in California, in the same sample, about 42% of 12th graders had taken Algebra 2 or higher before, but only two-thirds of those students then went on to take math in grade 12. So this speaks to this highest level, and again, some of the research we just heard that students who took trigonometry were being more successful than students who stopped at Algebra 2 in 12th grade or 11th grade. This is looking at the same thing, data by different ethnic groups. Again, these are students who took Algebra 2 or above by the end of 11th grade, before 12th grade, so they were on doing fairly well. You can see the percentages of Asian students who've taken Algebra 2 or above are double that for Black and Latino students. So, and again, only about two-thirds of the students then went on to take math in grade 12. So, some of the key findings from this descriptive analysis that I did, course taking patterns indicate that many students do not understand expectations for college. And I think some of the points that Julian just made of seeing, you know, which people were then impacted to take more, we're really seeing that many students don't understand what we expect at college. Community college-bound students were less likely to take math in grade 12, but not taking grade 12 math was commonplace for all groups. So this is from my sample. Not taking math in grade 12 was a significant predictor. This is from a logistic regression using placement assessment as the outcome at 2, 3, and 4 levels below college level. So it wasn't significant for just one level below, but at 2, 3, and 4, it was significant with a really big impact of about 58% more likely to place 2 levels below if you'd taken no math. 55% of the community college students who placed 2, 3, or 4 levels below college level math had not taken math in grade 12. But, and I think it's a but we need to keep in mind, 32% of the students who did place into college level also did not take grade 12 math. So no math in grade 12 is a huge opportunity in California because there are so many students not using grade 12 to advance their preparedness in math. But where students stopped is determined in part, not a but, and where students stop is determined in part by when students stop. So yes, that's a duh, but not taking algebra, stopping at algebra 2 means you're not getting beyond it. Most of the no math in grade 12 students in my sample passed grade 11 math. And students who advanced beyond algebra 2 were more frequently assessed as college ready. I also found, and this is to the last point that Julian just made, that failure to master middle school math was a huge issue. In my sample, almost 80% of students who passed the California High School Exit Exam, which we're not giving anymore, were assessed into 3 or 4 levels below transfer level math. So they assessed into basic math or pre-algebra, almost 80%. And this is, the KSE is measuring 7th grade math, or was measuring it, and it was a significant predictor of placement at all levels below. And students who passed it were congratulated. There was no curriculum in high school to fill in the gaps from prior grades, from these middle school years or elementary school years when students hadn't mastered this material they need to progress in mathematics. This is showing you the brand new assessments just out. This is from CASP, California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress, from the class of students who are 12th graders this year. And we can see that 60, almost 70% of these students have not met the standard. And if we look at this by ethnicity, it is a very disturbing picture, where Latino students, who are now double the number of white students in California, are not meeting the standard as they enter 12th grade at a rate of 80%, 85% for black students. So there's plenty of work to be done. Now, I think it's really important to note that my research used as the outcome placement measure a standardized assessment, as did Sonia's research. We are now finding, and there's a lot of research that indicates that performance in high school coursework, specifically a cumulative GPA, how did you do in 9th, 10th, 11th grade, better predicts performance in college coursework, are you actually going to pass a class, than does the current standardized placement assessment. And actually, when we look at both disjunctively, so that you're placing students either based on an algorithm based on their high school transcript material or based on their placement, it's best for students if we use these two because there's some underplacement from both methods. But placement accuracy, trying to figure out what's the highest level, in this case, community college course, the student will likely successfully complete has huge implications for student success and equity. This is a slide from Greg Staup, who's at Contra Costa Community College, and in his research he's finding that this placement process is really the biggest driver in equity, with 50% to 60% of inequity coming from how we're placing students. So in California, we are changing the placement assessment process, which is really thrilling. We have this California Common Assessment Initiative. This will be a whole new adaptive assessment. It's being designed for the system and our students. And the questions, the content is being developed by California Community College faculty. It crosswalks with the Common Core. It crosswalks with the different levels in curriculum, from low to high college level. And it's using a competency map model rather than a cut score or level model. It will be a statewide tool, so all of California's community colleges will use it once it's approved and fully rolled out. But placement decisions will be local, so that competency map, local faculty will be able to decide which competencies map to the coursework they offer, and perhaps, we hope, we'll be developing additional coursework to map that will meet the competency needs that come out. The Multiple Measures Assessment Project is another part of the California Common Assessment Initiative, which is also really exciting. There are about 60 colleges already working on this, and this is piloting placement using high school transcript information to develop algorithms or rule sets to place students based on how they did in high school. And we're finding when the goal of the projects are to improve the accuracy of placement and to reduce unnecessary remediation.
Louise, it's Pam. I wanted to clarify with that. That doesn't necessarily mean using the high school records to the exclusion of placement tests. In many cases, both are being used disjunctively, as you said earlier, correct?
Yes, they're being used disjunctively with the highest placement, with the placement determination going to that which is providing the highest placement recommendation. So, and eventually, as the data sets and the research are built, they may be used combined, but for now the recommendations are disjunctive. So you're not going to if you get a high placement from, or a higher placement from multiple measures, you wouldn't back a student out because they didn't do well on the standardized assessment. You would say the standardized assessment didn't recognize the student's capacity that they've demonstrated in their high school work. We're going to put them in this higher placement and expect them to be successful. And so this slide is showing you the projections, and this is for math and English, of the difference in using multiple measures placement as opposed to just the traditional placement. We get more students in. And here, this is looking at the course success rates, where the course success, even though you have far more students, is essentially the same. And as these are being implemented now in California, so for example, Bakersfield College over 2 years have saved their students combining math and English 4,000 semesters by using this placement, multiple measures placement instead of the standardized placement. And we're also seeing from early adopter colleges that many more students actually take math and English in their first year after they receive this placement, and that might be a you can do it effect as opposed to you can't do it effect. So it's very exciting. Underrepresented students are making considerable gains using this process, but again, everyone is, so the gap may be narrowing, but it's not getting eliminated. So some of the lessons that are coming out of the Multiple Measures Project work are interesting. One, and we've said this before, but not all grade 12 math is the same. So if you took Algebra 2 in 12th grade, or you took trigonometry in 12th grade, you're probably going to do better if you took trigonometry than Algebra 2. The multiple measures assessment project rule set now does not identify taking math in grade 12 per se as an important predictor of student performance once you measure how far students get in high school math. So this is somewhat different than what my research has said or Sonia's research is saying, although it's not totally inconsistent. It's what math you're taking really matters. And so the fact that you took it in 12th grade doesn't matter as much as how far did you get. And so they're finding, and again, and we saw this in the earlier presentation, if you took trigonometry or pre-calculus in 11th grade and you took algebra in 12th grade, you did better with, and no trigonometry. And no, if the pre-calculus person took no math in 12th grade and someone else took algebra 2 in 12th grade, the person who took the pre-calculus in grade 11 is probably going to be more successful. And if students take, like they took Algebra 2 in 11th grade, and then one took pre-calc in 12th, and another took no math, and another took some other math that wasn't really successive, the person who took the pre-calc or the trig would be doing better.
Hey, Louise, so we're going to need to wrap up soon.
Yeah, sure.
for
and the two things are related. Who took math in 12th grade, those students go farther in math, and students who go farther in math usually took math in 12th grade. So statewide disuse of grade 12 is not being used. That means grade 12 is a big opportunity. We need different curricular opportunities to increase preparedness for different groups of students. And the last point I want to make is not something we've discussed, but we also need different math degree requirements for different opportunities. And here, we really have to rely on UC and CSU Academic Senate for this. Community college faculty won't offer non-transferable coursework. I think we need to avoid an arms race, and I really appreciate that CSU Academic Senate's being clear about not increasing the standard, even as they argue for grade 12 math. I think that's it.
Thank you so much, Louise. And that was a perfect segue to our last presenter, David Barsky, who is going to talk about what CSU is considering around their math admissions requirements.
Hello. My presentation is going to be a little different because I'm not reporting on research in high school mathematics course taking, but rather I'll be addressing why it is that policymakers are very interested in this issue and what it is, and particularly what the CSU might be doing about it. And the context is going to be readiness for taking mathematics in the California State University. Just a sec. Okay, there. There's a delay in the slides advancing. So let me begin by just explaining what our challenge is. In 1996, 20 years ago, our Board of Trustees set a goal for the system to increase proficiency of entering first-year freshmen to 90% by 2007. So that was 9 years ago. And the CSU has implemented a number of strategies sort of in broad brushstrokes. The first was outreach and communication to students, families, and schools about the importance of taking mathematics in high school and why it was important to enter the CSU Mathematics Ready. Collaborative efforts with high schools. So from 1999 to 2003, there was a gigantic effort, CAPI, the Collaborative Academic Preparation Initiative, where CSU campuses worked with schools in the regions that were high feeders in terms of sending large numbers of students, but who also, those students were not mathematically proficient. And in fact, this was both on the mathematics side and the English side, but I'm going to talk specifically here about mathematics. The Early Assessment Program, which began in 2004 at the end of CAPI, which gave students additional routes for establishing proficiency and also giving them a heads up as they headed into the senior year. And I know that's a little late, of exactly where they stood and told them that they were already college ready or proficient, whether they were almost, that was our conditionally proficient category, or whether they were not yet proficient, and then gave the students who were conditionally proficient a way to become proficient, and that would be by taking and passing a senior year mathematics course. In 2012, the system began the Early Start program, which requires students who are not yet proficient to come to a CSU campus. It doesn't have to be the one that they're going to be attending in the fall. It could be one which is much closer to where they live, but to participate in some sort of summer experience. And again, these are Early Start and Early Assessment program are math and English, but I'm thinking mostly for this presentation about mathematics side. Those are the primary strategies to date, but they're not the entire story. There are all sorts of other tweaks. For example, at various points, the conditionally proficient label was and its route toward establishing proficiency became available to students with certain ACT or SAT scores. And although students weren't required initially to attend the Early Start program if they were conditionally proficient, as of 2015, so as of a year ago, they are now required to attend Early Start if they did not move from conditionally proficient to fully proficient over the course of their senior year. Now, this is effectively what I might call my disclaimer slide. I am not speaking for the Senate. Or even for APEP, which is the Academic Preparation and Education Programs Committee, the committee that, of which I'm a vice chair, but I'm speaking really from the perspective of a member of the Senate and at APEP, and I'm reporting on what it is they've done rather than speaking for them. So the Academic Senate is the official voice of the faculty. APEP has a two-part charge, and the academic preparation is where we're very interested in knowing what it is that students are able to do as they enter the CSU. So remember that our Board of Trustees, our audacious Board of Trustees goal was to by 1996 was to by 2007 have 90% of all entering freshmen be proficient. And if you look at this chart, you can see that proficiency rates have generally increased over time, but they're not yet up to 90%. If you look at this, I should also just mention that you can see some historical effects in these charts. There's a big jump between 2001 and 2002. So that's the between the freshmen that entered in 2001 and freshmen entered in 2002. That actually is probably really an artifact of the fact that the ELM exam changed at that point in time. You also sort of see general improvement between 2002 up to 2011. It oscillates a little bit, but that might be attributed to the early assessment program, which was in place. And then you'd see another jump, which happens around 2012 and continues. And that would be, I believe, maybe the effect of the Early Start program, and in particular, the requirement that later on that conditionally proficient students have to participate in Early Start. I can tell you that in 2000, the highest in particular campuses, no campus was yet to the 90% mark. In 2007, one campus was at 90%, above 90%. And in the most recent year for which we have data, 2015, four campuses, one of them is very specialized, Maritime Academy, and three others are what are called all programs impacted campuses, campuses that are able to control their enrollments very, very carefully. And that perhaps explains why they are at 90% proficiency. There is quite a range in the entire system. From campus to campus, this is the system-wide data. So that last table chart, I think, explains why it is that APEP and also the statewide Senate, ASCSU, felt compelled to try to take some additional action to try to further move the needle on this. And last spring, I believe this was March, the CSU passed a resolution that came out of APEP, which calls for the CSU to require a fourth year of mathematics, and in fact, for that year to take place in the senior year. And a really important thing for me to mention at this point is this is just a call. It does not, so don't go home and say, oh my goodness, 4 years of mathematics are now required for entry to CSU. It's the start of a process. There are a lot of steps and consultation. There'll be consultation with all segments of education, especially K-12 because it's a requirement which directly affects them, and also the University of California because we share the common A through G course admissions package. We want to make certain that, that this doesn't upset this. It's also going to take a fair amount of time. Oh, let me go back to mention just the UC. This is probably more of a CSU issue than it is of a UC issue. One of the very first status quo slides that you saw at the beginning of this webinar was that 93% of UC applicants already are taking 4 years of mathematics in high school, whereas I believe the number was 70% for the CSU. It will take time. If the CSU were to adopt this requirement, the natural implementation period would probably be 4 to 5 years, and it would only become operational for students who are in the process of moving from middle school or junior high school to the high school. So for most students, that would be from moving from 8th grade to 9th grade. It would not be ex post facto on students who are already in high school. I should mention also that at its next plenary, the ASCSU followed this up by unanimously approving another resolution from APEP, which calls for a Center for Advancement of Instruction in Mathematics. And we envision that being a center that would be analogous to the already existing Center for Advancement of Reading that supports the ERWC, the so-called Expository Reading and Writing Curriculum course, and they would support an analogous course or courses that might be developed for high schools to offer as a 12th year course. Let me go back, having told you now what the punchline is of the Senate resolution, and mention a little bit about why it is that we're doing this. And of course, the trite answer is, well, because we want more students to enter with proficiencies in mathematics / quantitative reasoning. But this slide, and I'm not going to go over it very carefully, in very much detail, speaks to why it is we feel that that's important. We view quantitative reasoning and mathematics as being foundational skills that are going to help students be successful in college and whatever they do afterwards. And we are very concerned that mathematics is something, and we've seen some data in the presentations of the earlier presenters about decline of ability when students take a year off from mathematics study before coming to the university. There's more also in the resolution. I will honestly say that after listening to my fellow presenters, I'm thinking a little bit about the fact that in our rationale, which sort of spells out what it was that APEP and then the ASCSU were thinking about this, we offered a very broad interpretation of what could count as a fourth course. And we were thinking not just one more course along the road to calculus, or not just a statistics course, but thinking, in fact, anything that would help get students, keep them engaged quantitatively. It could be finite mathematics, it could be financial literacy, it could be, in fact, a computer science kind of course, coding. It might even be repetitive, something that would go back and help students who had barely gotten through the Algebra 2, give them another crack at it. And so the idea is that this would not necessarily add to the 18 required units for A through G. It might be, if it was a college a preparation course, it might be something that would count in the what we sometimes think of as the grab bag category. Category G is one unit of basically any college prep course, or it might in fact just be a course outside of the 18 if it was, for example, in that more repetitive kind. The second bullet talks about the fact that we are very sensitive to the access mission of the CSU, and we don't want to achieve proficiency on the backs of turning away students, especially students from historically underserved groups. And the third, I think I've already said, is that we've sort of recognized that we need to talk very much with our partners in K-12 and our other intersegmental colleagues about this, because this would be a big change. It would have a lot of major ripple effect. And so this is not something that the CSU is going to unilaterally do without lots and lots and lots of consultation. As we looked at this, we sort of asked ourselves the question, I mean, can we do this? Is this possible? What sort of precedent would this set? One of the things we noticed, and we went back and looked at all the communication materials that the CSU sends out, and that is a substantial effort that it makes, is that although we only require 3 years of mathematics at or above the level of Algebra 1, longstanding practice has always been to recommend for such years. So remember, California law only requires 2 years, the CSU and the UC only require 3, we strongly recommend for such years. And then we looked across the nation and recognized that in fact there's a task force report that I'll mention briefly in just a few moments, and in working on that we noticed that there are lots and lots of universities and university systems across the U.S. that now require 4 years mathematics for admission, several of them specifying that that fourth year must be taken in the senior year of high school. I think this is the last slide. Looking forward, what do we want? Well, we want to continue serving a diverse and broad cross-section of California students. As I said, we don't want to reach the 90% proficiency rate of our incoming freshman classes by turning away students. We want to do this by, in fact, helping students enter more prepared. And clearly, that's what we want. We want students to enter prepared to take that college-level mathematics courses and not have to waste any time taking courses that get them ready for that once they've already arrived at the university. And finally, those of you who are mathematicians may recognize this appropriated or this paraphrasing of a quote. We would like mathematics quantitative reasoning. We'd like to turn that really from being a pump into a filter. Yes, we'd like to turn it into a pump and not being a filter. We'd like it basically to open up doorways to students to be able to go on and pursue challenging academic and career opportunities, some of those in STEM disciplines, but even in non-STEM disciplines. And I think as I was listening to the other presenters, I made a little note to myself that probably this long-term picture is going to certainly involve steps like pre-high school interventions, because I think that we recognize that not all of this is going to magically happen by requiring students to take one more year of mathematics in high school. That's going to help, again, bump up proficiencies a little bit. I think it also sends a strong signal to students about how important we think that this really is. And I think that would be the end of my slides.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much, David. We just have a few minutes left for questions. I think I'll take this first question for you, David. It's from Olga Rodriguez of Public Policy Institute of California. She is wondering if the CSU has considered using a multiple measure placement system similar to what the community colleges are doing, and if you know how many students would be able to take college level math and succeed in college level math if you were looking at high school records when determining placement. Any idea about that?
Well, let me take the second part first, and that is I have the answer. How many students would I would have no idea what that number is. The in terms of the multiple measures, in a certain sense, we already do, in the sense that students have many many different routes to showing that they are proficient. One of the earliest of these might be, for example, taking the early assessment program, which has now been rolled into the Smarter Balanced Assessment test that students take. The use of ACT and SAT scores for students that have gone on to take calculus, of course, the AP or statistics at the AP or international baccalaureate level. Those things clearly establish proficiency. There is the entry level mathematics exam. Yeah.
Yes, I just want to give another speaker a chance maybe to respond to this. Louise, do you want to respond to that at all? Because I know these are multiple tests, but would you consider that to be multiple measures in the vein that you talked about earlier?
Well, I think those are all tests so far. But if they can do something like the expository reading writing as a 12th grade course, that's not a test. Then you complete a class and say, okay, you need this content material to do that. So that's another alternative that would be good.
Right.
I think we get more and more research, we'll have a more compelling story and we'll go from there.
Right. I want to point out that our fourth webinar, which is coming up in October 27th, is going to discuss that very issue of a senior year course, transition course. I want to have time for one more question.
If I could, though, just mention that there are course options in the sense that the students who have scored well enough to be in that conditionally proficient category, all they need to do is now pass a senior year mathematics course in high school. So there are some course options embedded in the alongside the exams.
Great. I think we have a question from Joe Fiedler, who's also in the CSU, and he's pointing out a tension in this research that we've been talking about seniors who take math in their senior year are kind of self-selecting. They, for some reason, they like math or they value it more than students who don't. How do we know whether this self-selection alone accounts for the differences in performance? And if that's the case, would our efforts to require more math be limited by this fact? I think I'm going to ask Julian, would you want to take a stab at this? Because this is our last question, unfortunately.
I think our questioner is exactly right. There's a huge amount of self-selection in terms of who takes math in grade 12 and what type of math course one takes in grade 12. I've done some work with Heather Rose, who's now at UC Davis. This is published in an academic journal, but also through the Public Policy Institute of California, where we showed that students who take algebra and geometry are much more likely to attend college and graduate from college and also to have higher earnings. And we were concerned that there's some self-selection going on here. And we used a statistical technique called instrumental variables, where we essentially replaced a person's actual course taking with course takings predicted by the average course taking of everybody around that person in the school. And this is a way to get at the problem that, you know, maybe David's better at math than Julian, so David's naturally, even though we're going to the same high school, is going to take more math than Julian is. And we found that our results were still robust, that taking algebra and geometry were two of the most predictive courses you could take in any subject in high school in terms of long-term outcomes such as completing college and earnings about a decade after graduating from high school. And I think what we're finding in San Diego is that when we require everybody to take more math, it's not easy. And some students are going to fall by the wayside unless they receive significant additional supports. Our district in San Diego is doing a lot already, but our hunch is that we know that there are students entering high school who still struggle with proportional reasoning, have struggle to understand and use the number line, which are two of the most predictive types of understanding in math you could have for longer term outcomes. So intervening earlier is really the way to go.
Well, thanks for that. I'm working on my second grader now and her math skills. I think about it all the time with all the work I'm doing on math. Listen, we have more questions, and unfortunately we don't have time to cover them, but it just shows there's a lot of interest in this topic, and we're going to keep talking about it. I want to thank the presenters so much for taking the time to share your thinking and your research with us, and I want to thank the participants for listening and for your questions, and I want to thank our sponsors and our funders, especially the staff of the Opportunity Institute, who are here with me now, helping make this thing work. We're going to be posting the recordings on the websites of both Opportunity Institute and LearningWorks. And again, our next webinar is October 27th about senior year transition courses in math. Please look out for the invitation for that, and we hope you'll join us then. Thank you so much, and goodbye.